tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
You guys look amazing. You look so good. And I want to tell you, there is no pressure to follow me on any social media platform. I don't ever want to pressure anyone. I just want to let you know that every Sunday I do a little shout out to who had the hottest service of the day. And I just want to tell you, from my viewpoint standing in the back watching it, I am heavily leaning towards this service being the hottest service of the day. The fact, yeah. If you keep up the work, I'm telling you, it's in the bag. The thing that impressed me is we had a T-Rex worshiping God during this whole service. It was incredible. It was amazing. So thank you all so much for being here. We are continuing our series entitled The Lamb is Greater Than the Donkey and the Elephant. And something that I've tried to say every single week is that this is a series about politics, but it's not a series where I'm telling you who to vote for. And it's also not a series where we're going to bash on either one of the candidates. This is a series, though, where we're really encouraging and challenging Christians to do something. Now, I want to make sure that you hear this. If you're here today and you're not a Christian, I think it's awesome that you're at church. This is a safe place for you to learn about Jesus, and I think it's so cool that you're here today. But what we're asking of Christians is that they consider this, especially during this political season. It comes from a question that Pastor Andy Stanley asks. And the question is, are you willing to evaluate your politics through the filter of the Christian faith rather than create a faith that supports your politics? Are you willing? Are you willing to even do this? And that's what we're trying to do throughout this series, trying to give us something to think about and a goal to aim at. And at the same time, I hope this is a series where you've learned some interesting facts. Like, I talked to someone early on in the series who said that they did not know that the political parties had mascots of the donkey and the elephant. And they had always heard of colors representing the different political parties. So we have red states and we have blue states. And when this person said that to me, my brain is highly analytical. And so I started wondering, where do we get these colors from? And so thanks to Google, I actually figured out where the colors come from. The way that it all started was at the dawn of color television, the election, Jimmy Carter was running for Democrats and Gerald Ford was running for Republicans, and NBC was the first one to put light bulbs on a map to decide to help people know which state won for which candidate. At that time, though, it actually was reversed, and red was for Democrat and blue was for Republican. All of the other networks saw this and thought it was a great idea, and so they all picked their own colors to represent their candidates. So from the 70s back then all the way up to 2000, whatever election you watched, whatever network, there was just random colors that people picked that thought whatever would look best on color television. But in the year 2000, all of the news networks agreed that they were going to do the exact same colors, and they based it off what NBC was doing. And at that time, NBC had chosen red for Republican and blue for Democrat. I found that fascinating, that this whole red versus blue thing, it's only been around for 20 years. In the year 2000 is when it really became prominent as a part of our culture. So now that I told you something that I thought was interesting, hopefully you found it interesting, I want to tell you something that I think most of you will disagree with. I hope that you can disagree and we can still be friends, but I want to tell you that I think you're going to disagree with this because people disagree with me about it on a regular basis. In fact, I have my own family members who disagree with me about this. In fact, the vast majority of my friends disagree with what I'm about to say. So because so many people in my life disagree, I think it's a safe assumption that you're probably going to disagree with this as well. In my life, I have chosen and made a statement, that I will not block or hide or unfriend people on social media. It's a stance that I've made. Now, the exception to this is if someone is bullying or someone is harmful to someone else, then I would change that stance. But I do not unfriend people. I don't block people. I don't hide people. Even people that I disagree with, even people who I think are being ridiculous. And especially, I don't do this if they go to Next Level Church. I don't hide people. I don't unfriend people if they go to our church. You can go to Next Level and have all sorts of crazy views. And I just want you to know, I may like your status simply just to let you know your pastor is watching what you post on social media. But I won't unfriend you. I won't hide you. I don't unfollow you no matter what you post, even if you post things that I disagree with. And the reason that I do that is that I ultimately believe that if we go, especially if we're Christians and we go to the same church, that we have something that is greater in common than who we vote for or opinions that we have about divisive issues in our world. And I want to ask you a question. I want to get you to wrestle with something, especially during this very divisive political season. If you're here today and you are a Christian and you're active, especially if you're active on social media, here is a rhetorical question that I want you to answer. For whom do I feel greater affection? People who agree with my politics but don't share my faith, or people who share my faith but don't agree with my politics? Who do you have a greater affection with? Who do you find that you agree with more? Do you find that you block other Christians if they disagree with you politically, but you will keep people that maybe agree with you politically, but they don't follow Jesus? And ultimately, what we're trying to do in this series is trying to unite everyone and say, hey, listen, you are going to vote differently than some people that you go to church with, and you're going to have different opinions, and sometimes those opinions are strong, but at the end of the day, we want to make sure that we're holding on to the thing that unites us, and that is Jesus. And ultimately, the reason that I don't unfollow or unfriend people that I disagree with is because a big reason that I'm on social media is that I want to be an influencer. I want to be someone that has influence over people. And if you do not share a media platform, if you're not friends with, if you're not around people that disagree with you, you don't have the ability to influence. Because if everyone agrees with you, you're not influencing anyone to do anything. And I am convinced that every single one of us are influencers. Well, what's the definition of an influencer? An influence is simply the capacity to have an impact on someone. I feel like the bar is really low for that definition, but that is the literal definition of influencer. It's just the capacity to have an impact on someone. So because it is simply the capacity, I am convinced that means that every single one of us is an influencer. We all have the capacity. You may have a very small capacity, but every single one of us has capacity to have an impact on someone. If you're married or dating, you have the ability to influence. If you have kids, you have the ability to influence. If you have grandkids, you have the ability to influence. If you go to a job and you work with people, you have the ability to influence. In your neighborhood, you have the potential to influence. And on social media, every time you post, you have the ability to influence. Influence is simply the capacity to have an impact on someone. Something that I've learned over the years is that not only do we all have the ability to influence, we have way more influence over people than what we actually know. The people that you are influencing probably aren't telling you that you've influenced them. They're just being influenced and going on with their days. And I learned this because for years, I blogged 5 days a week at a personal blog called robshep.com. And just some fun history, just a little fun fact about this. If Next Level is your church, I think it's important that you know the history of our church. And our church was started from a blog post. That I did a blog post announcing that I was going to start a church, and that's how we gathered people. It was just from one blog post. And so that's a little fun fact about your church. This blog that I wrote, compared to very successful blogs, it would have been considered a mid-level to small blog. I had, on average, 1,000 to 1,500 readers every single day. The big bloggers had hundreds of thousands to millions. So because of that, I didn't really think that I had a lot of influence. I just did it because I enjoyed it. Well, because I blogged 5 days a week, I just wrote about the things that were in my life, the things that I was doing. And one time I went to a conference in Atlanta, Georgia, and I had nothing else to blog about, so I blogged about going to this conference. And I tried to put in this a bunch of funny things that I just, insights that I had. And at some point in the blog, I don't even remember writing this, I had this little throwaway line that said, if I was single and a Christian, I would move to Atlanta, Georgia, because there are a lot of Christian singles in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, I don't remember saying that, and that wasn't the main point of the blog. It was a tiny little phrase that was in this massive blog post about my conference. 2 years after I posted that, I was tagged in a Facebook post. And the Facebook post was a wedding announcement. And in the wedding announcement, the girl said that her life changed when she read a blog post at robshep.com where she read that if I was a single, that I would move to to Atlanta, Georgia, because there's a lot of Christian singles in Atlanta, Georgia. And she packed up everything and moved from Orlando, Florida to Atlanta, Georgia. And 2 years later, she is married. Now, here's the thing. I didn't realize I had that kind of influence. I didn't even know she liked me. Like, hey, you can clap for that. I honestly didn't know that she liked me. Like, we were friends on Facebook, but she never liked or interacted with anything. She never commented on anything. I had no idea that she read my blog, let alone know that I would have the type of influence. Do you know how hard it is to move? Like, do you know how much, like, that's a big thing. And I was blown away. And I'm convinced that you have more influence in your life than what you realize. There's someone watching, and by the way that you carry yourself, by even the little things like the way that you eat or the things that you watch on TV, there are people watching you, and you have the ability to influence. Why? Because influence is simply the capacity to have an impact on someone. And everyone has some influence. And if you don't have a lot of influence, you can always gain more influence. Here's something that is important. Influence is something that is gained incrementally, but it is lost instantly. We gain influence little bits over long periods of time, but we can lose influence in an instant. Today, we have people who get paid, their whole job, their whole career is to be social media influencers. I don't know how to get that gig, but I think it's an awesome job. In fact, I have a friend who is paid by Sbarro Pizza. Do you remember, anyone remember Sbarro Pizza that used to be in the malls? My friend gets paid by Sbarro Pizza to just insert Sbarro into his Instagram posts. So he'll have a random post where he's just eating pizza, and Sbarro has paid him money to show that pizza because he has so many followers on Instagram. Now, some of you are here, and you're like, that sounds awesome. I wish I could be an influencer. I would love to be an influencer on YouTube or Instagram or TikTok, and that sounds like a sweet gig. But there's some of you here who are like, that's silly. I don't care about that kind of stuff. And I wouldn't want to be an influencer. I wouldn't want people to pay me money to just eat the things that I like to eat online. Some of you don't care. And here's the thing that I want to make sure that you get. Whether you want to be an influencer or you don't, you are. Not wanting to be an influencer doesn't change the fact that you are an influencer. You have influence. You have the capacity to impact someone. And if you're here today and you're a Christian, your greatest thing that you are trying to influence people to do is to follow Jesus. And I want to show you this, that you are called to be an influencer through our text for today. Our text is written by the Apostle Paul. At Next Level, we often say that Paul is a primetime player. He wrote over half of the New Testament, and he wrote a few letters to the church in Corinth. He wrote at least three letters, but we only have copies of two of his letters. And we're going to read part of his letter that we've creatively titled 1 Corinthians. And at Next Level, we honor the text. We do that by standing to our feet. So I want to invite you to stand to your feet and read with me nice and loud, 1 Corinthians 9, 22 through 23. And we like to have a little bit of fun. If you're new, I hope you can see that we're wearing costumes because we like to have a little bit of fun. And we have a little bit of fun with this. The reference is where we find this, 1 Corinthians 9, 22 through 23. And between the 9 and the 22, you'll see two dots. And the fun that we like to have is we put our fists out and we just say dot, dot. If you're new, you're welcome to have some fun with us. Would you read it with me nice and loud? It says, I have become all things to all people, so that by all possible means I might save some. I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I might share in its blessing. 1 Corinthians 9, dot, dot, 22 through 23. Now that we've read the text, will you go to God in prayer with me? God, we come before you, and we ask in Jesus' name that you would speak to our hearts, that you would be louder than the other voices and distractions that are going on in our minds, that you'd be louder than our problems, that you'd be louder than even our opinions. And we ask, God, that you would speak to us and that, God, we would listen. God, I ask that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight. Oh, Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. You may have a seat. So the author of the verse that we just read, his name is Paul. And in his day and age, it wasn't Republicans or Democrats that were against each other. It was Jews and Gentiles, specifically in the church. Now, if you grew up in church, you may be very familiar with this. If you're new to the church scene, maybe you've never heard this before. And I want to make sure that we're all on the same page. In the following text, we're going to read, and you're going to see the word Jew, and you're going to see Gentile a lot. And for your context, what I would encourage you to do is wherever you see Jew or Gentile, just replace that with Republican or Democrat. Because even though it's different people and it's a different situation, the heart is the same. You had two groups of people who did not like one another. You had two groups of people that fundamentally disagreed with one another. On the one side, you had Jewish people, and this is a little bit complex because Judaism is a religion, but to be a Jew, it's also a people group. So when you were Jewish, it meant that you were born, primarily that your mom was Jewish, and you were born into a race of Jewish people. But along with that race came a religion called the Jewish faith. So if someone wanted to convert to Judaism, they didn't just convert to the faith, they also had to convert to the race. They had to take on all of the practices of the Jewish people. So that's very problematic if you didn't grow up Jewish and you want to believe in the Jewish God, and they start saying things like, yeah, if you want to follow our God, you got to be circumcised as an adult male, and you got to start dressing this way and talking this way and celebrating these holidays, and that's not natural to you. On the other side, you had the Gentiles, and the Gentile is simply a word that Jewish people called anyone that was not Jewish. So if you weren't born in a Jewish household, the term that they would give is Gentile. And the Jews viewed Gentiles as being pagans, as being less than, as being not as religious. They looked down upon the Gentiles. Well, Jesus comes and he dies for all people. And so he takes away this dividing wall between Jewish and Gentile. And all of a sudden in the early church, you find Jewish Christians and Gentile Christians going to church together. And this is problematic because the two groups do not like one another. And look at what Paul says to these two groups of people. 1 Corinthians 9:19, he writes, "Though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible." Now this is some strong language. Paul says that he makes himself a slave. The context, though, in Paul's day and age was very different than in our day and age. When we hear slave, we think about American slavery. But what you need to understand is the world that Paul lived in, slavery was widely accepted as a way to pay back a debt. You weren't a slave because of a race. You were a slave because you didn't have enough money to pay back your debts. It really was more of an indentured servant. So if you were a slave, you were not a slave for your whole life, and your kids weren't born into slavery. You were a slave for a time, a short time period, sometimes a longer time period. You were a slave until you could pay back your debt and pay off your debt. So even though it's very different than the slavery that we had in America, it's still not something that someone would want. No one was looking to be an indentured servant. They did it because they couldn't pay back their debts. And Paul says that he willingly becomes a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. So what does that mean? Well, that's a great question. Thank you for asking it. I appreciate you being engaged and asking questions. I want to show you what that means because Paul actually tells us in the very next verse, 1 Corinthians 9:20 through 21, he says, "To the Jews, I become like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I become like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I become like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak, I become weak sauce, to win the weak." Now this is huge. Whether or not you think this is huge, this is massively huge. And it's why I asked you to convert in your brains, instead of seeing Jewish Gentile, convert it to Democrat or Republican. Because what Paul is saying is that he has one foot in the Democrat camp and he has one foot in the Republican camp, and people are wanting him to choose. Isn't that what happens in our culture all the time? I get asked all the time, who am I voting for and what political party? And I confuse people all the time. They don't know. Am I liberal? Am I conservative? That's what was going on in Paul's day and age. Some people were saying, well, are you Jewish? Because sometimes you act like a Gentile. And the Gentiles were saying, well, are you one of us? Because sometimes you act Jewish. And Paul's saying, I got a foot in this camp, I got a foot in that camp, and I'm not going to choose. And the reason I'm not going to choose is because at the end of the day, I want to influence all people to win them over for Jesus. And this is where we get our big idea for today. If you're taking notes, which I encourage you to do, the big idea for today is, as a Christian, the goal is to win people, not arguments. As a Christian, the goal is to win people, not arguments. And how do we win people? It is by influence. We win people by influencing them, not by arguing with them, and not by avoiding them. all this political drama in our world, you naturally have one of two reactions to this. When there's drama, especially on Facebook, if you're still on Facebook, when you see the drama, one of two reactions that you have is either one, you avoid it, and you avoid it by unfriending, unfollowing, hiding, or just saying, I'm getting off Facebook because I can't handle the drama anymore. The second response that people have is they engage with it by criticizing or arguing. Neither one of those two things gain influence. If you ignore everybody, if you unfriend everyone, if you don't have friends with people that disagree with you, you've lost the ability to influence them. But at the same time, if you argue and criticize people, you lose the ability to influence. And ultimately, what we want to do is we want to influence people who disagree with us. This political divide that we're feeling right now in our country, it's nothing new. In fact, it's something that's been at the very beginning of time, and it's been at the very beginning of America. John Wesley was a pastor in America and a theologian, and in 1774, he wrote the following words. Now, just to put this into context, the Declaration of Independence was written in 1776. So if you know history, you know this was a very divisive political time. This was a time where people did not get along, they did not agree, and a lot was at stake in the forming of this new country, America. Look at what John Wesley wrote. I met those of our society who had votes in the ensuing election, and I advised them, number one, to vote for the person they judge most worthy. And that's the same thing that I feel today. Vote who you feel is most worthy. Vote, I hope you've prayed about it, but vote for the candidate that supports your convictions the most. But number two is important. To speak no evil of the person they voted against. Why? Because in our brains, when we like something, we automatically start to say, if I like this, that means I'm right. And if that means if I don't like something, they're wrong. And if you're not careful, you'll turn someone with a different opinion into an enemy. And Paul and John Wesley says, don't speak evil of the person that they voted against. But number three is the one that I think applies to all of us in the room. He says to take care their spirits were not sharpened against those that voted on the other side. And what he means by that is to protect your heart. Make sure that you're not angry and upset with people, especially people of faith that you go to church with who vote differently than you do. Make sure that you guard your heart, that you don't turn someone who's supposed to be a friend into an enemy simply because they have different political views. That's great advice. And it's not just great advice for Christians in 1774. It's great advice for us in 2020. Ultimately, if you want to win people, if you want to change someone's opinion, it doesn't come from hiding them or arguing with them. It comes from influencing them. But the reason it's hard to influence is that when we hear that someone disagrees with us, our natural inclination is to want to push back and argue with it. Now, I need everyone in the room to stick with me on this because I'm going to teach you something that I think is very important. In fact, if you want to learn how to win more arguments, you need to learn and understand what I'm about to teach you. Even if you're not a Christian, you can apply what I'm about to teach you. Miles' law is something that applies a lot to politics, but Miles' law states, where you stand depends on where you sit. And what that means is that all of us have a seat, and the seat that we're sitting in is based off our race, it's based off our gender, it's based off our family origin, it's based off the country we live in, it's based off our faith, that there's all sorts of things that have influenced us, and that's where we sit. Those are the things that have shaped who we are as a human being. So because of where we sit, when we take a stand on something and say, I believe this, it is incredibly personal to us. So this is why when you make an opinion and someone pushes back on it, you feel attacked. Even if they're not being mean, if someone says, I disagree with you, something inside of you says that hurts. Why? Because what you stand on comes from where you sit. This is incredibly important to understand, especially with politics, because when someone disagrees with you on politics and you start giving them facts and figures and they just dig their feet in and they say, I don't care, why has it become so personal? Because from where they sit, they have a different viewpoint than what you're sharing with them. And what becomes incredibly frustrating is when you are dealing with someone and you've shared with them facts and figures and they say to you, I don't care what you say. And from where you sit, you're like, well, this is a no-brainer. This is a layup. Here are the facts why you should vote a different way. Here are the facts on why you should have a different view than the one that you have. How can you disagree with this? Have you ever dealt with someone like this on social media? I have. In fact, I've dealt with this with my own kids. where I've given them facts and figures, and it's like they don't care. They are going to do what they want to do. In fact, about 3 years ago, my kids were around the age of six. I think they were five going on six. And we were having breakfast and doing our morning devotion, reading the Bible. And it was around Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And so I decided to ask my kids if they knew why Dr. Martin Luther King was important to us and what he did for America. And in their little brains, they had learned some things from our family and learned some things from school. And they shared their viewpoint. And they gave great answers. And I said, yes, but I want to add to that just to make sure you know the impact. That there was a time in our country where if you were born black, you were not allowed to drink from a water fountain that a white person drank from. And my kids said, oh, yeah, that's wrong. And I said, did you know there were restaurants that would say if the color of your skin is black, you're not allowed to go to this restaurant, but if you're white, it's okay. And they were like, oh, yeah, that's wrong. And at the time, my daughter's best friend was an amazing little young African-American girl. And we have multiple friends that come from other races. And so I thought they were really getting this. And I said, we are thankful for Dr. Martin Luther King because he took a stand against this. And he caused it so that these things changed in America. And we're so thankful that they changed because we value diversity. And at that, my daughter said, yeah, like Uncle John John is black. Now, I need to help everyone get on the same page. There's two things here. Right now in our culture, anytime you bring up race, it becomes just kind of heated. And what I want you to know is that the following story is meant to be funny, and it's okay to laugh at. My family laughs at it all the time. The second thing that you need to know is that my brother is not adopted. He is my biological brother. So when my daughter declares that her uncle, Uncle John John, is a black man, I have some questions. I'm not against him being a black man. I would love it if he was black. In fact, my wife says of me often that she thinks I wish I was a black man. So I would absolutely celebrate and love it if my brother was black. But I just was very perplexed because my daughter's not colorblind. My daughter knows her colors, and she's of age where she knows that there are differences. So the fact that she said that her Uncle John John was a black man, I had some questions. Because I knew where what she stands on comes from where she sits. So there's some reasoning. There's some rationale to why she says this. So I just started asking her. I said, hey, do you know who John John's parents are? She said, yeah, it's Mamaw and Papaw. I said, yeah, you know the Mamaw and Papaw that we live with? We bought a house with my parents. They're in the same house. And she said, yeah. And I said, well, what color are Mamaw and Papaw? And she said, white. I said, good, interesting. Do you know who John John's brother is? And she said, yeah, you're his brother. I said, okay, what color am I? She said, white. I said, okay, so what color is John John? Black. Okay, I'm not getting anywhere with you. If you have two white parents, you're going to produce a white kid, right? Yes, but John John's black. Okay, I'm missing something. So I literally pulled out my phone. And at this point, her twin brother is in on the conversation, and he's very engaged in it as well. And I pull up my phone, and I show them a picture of my brother and his wife, their aunt. This is Uncle John John and Aunt Nicole. And I show them this picture, and I say, okay, do you see Aunt Nicole? What color is Aunt Nicole? They both said white. I said, okay, next to her is Uncle John John. What color is Uncle John John? They both said black. I said, I'm not understanding. And so then I said, are you not looking at the same picture I'm looking at? And at this point, my son says to me, Dad, I don't care what you show me. Uncle John John is a black man. How do you argue with that? Dad, I don't care what facts you present to me. I don't care if you put a picture in front of me. I will not change my opinion. Why? Because where you stand comes from where you sit. And have you ever dealt with someone? It's infuriating when you're like, it's so clear to you that they should have a different opinion. And you know all the facts and you know all the figures. And you know the reason that they shouldn't think the way that they think. But yet they dig their feet in and say, well, I don't care what you show me. Why? Because it's personal to them. Because from where they sit, they see a different viewpoint from you. You see, everybody's viewpoint makes sense to them. Everyone's does. And so if someone's viewpoint makes sense to them, they're not going to change their view simply because you've told them they're wrong. In fact, when you tell them they're wrong and you argue with them, they're going to dig in even more because from their viewpoint, it's like, I don't care what you say. You just see it from a different angle. So when we are engaging with people, we need to have a big picture. We need to zoom out some. And we need to understand that arguing and fighting with one another doesn't change anyone's view. But influence does. And it makes me think a lot about the state of Christianity today. Because criticism and correction diminish influence because it feels like disapproval. And if you think about Christianity today, Christianity has lost its influence in America because the only Christians that are being vocal about anything seem to be the ones that criticize and condemn everything. But criticism and correction actually diminish your ability to influence. So it makes me think about, if you've ever visited a big city, which I've visited a few big cities, and almost every big city that I've visited, and we lived in Dallas-Fort Worth area, and so we visited those as well. Almost every big city that I've been a part of, there are people who stand on street corners, and they yell at people walking by. These are people who represent Jesus, who say that they're Christians, and they yell things like, the kingdom of heaven is at hand, or they yell that Jesus is coming back, and they yell at people to repent, and they tell people, they scream at people that they're going to hell. They're not listening to anyone or asking anyone opinion, they are telling people. On the one hand, I don't know if you've ever seen anyone like that, but I've dealt with multiple people like that. And on the one hand, I actually kind of respect that they do that. I disagree with their method because I don't think it's effective, but I kind of respect the fact that they have the courage to tell people about their faith. Because they're getting criticized left and right. People are calling them out and challenging them and saying all sorts of things to them. So I kind of respect it, especially in view of this statistic. According to Lifeway Research, when asked how often Christians share their faith, nearly half, 48% of church attendees responded, zero. 33% of people say they've personally invited someone one or two times, and 19% say they've done so on three or more occasions in the last 6 months. So often I hear people say that Christianity is losing its influence. Well, why is Christianity losing its influence? Because the vast majority of people that are saying anything about Christianity are doing so by condemning and criticizing the world, and the world is not listening, because when you condemn and criticize someone, you lose influence over their life. And the other half aren't saying anything about their faith. Neither one of those gain influence in our life. If we want to influence people, it comes with knowing people that are different than us. It comes from knowing people that vote different and look different and engaging with them and showing them the love of God. Not arguing with them, but showing them the love of God. Why? Because everyone influences someone sometimes. And as Christians, we are called to influence others. The question is not, did I stand against something? The question is, did I influence someone? Look at what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 9, 22 through 23. He says, I've become all things to all people, so that by all possible means I might save some. I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I might share in its blessing and belong to no one. I have made myself a slave to everyone. Why? To win as many people as possible. That Paul literally says, to the Democrat, I become a Democrat. To the Republican, I become a Republican. I find a way to have something in common with everyone. Why? Because my end goal is not to convert people to Democrats or Republicans. My end goal is to convert people to Jesus. And Paul says, this is the thing I'm going to take a stand on. I won't choose sides. I won't call one side evil. I won't preach against one side. I become all things to all people so that I might win some. Now let's just zoom out for just a second. Let's just zoom out. Is Paul, if you didn't grow up in church, but you've been to Next Level for a handful of weeks, you will be able to answer this question correctly. Is the Apostle Paul, the guy who wrote over half of the New Testament, is Paul influential? Yes or no? Yes. Why is Paul influential? Because he made a decision to become all things to all people so that he could win some. Today, when someone disagrees with us, we lose sight of the big picture and we just tell them how wrong they are, and we throw stats and figures at them, and we lose the fact that we may win an argument, but we've just lost the ability to influence them. And Paul says, hey, I'll take the heat. I'll take you telling me to choose sides. I won't choose sides. I will become all things to all people because my goal is to win people over to Jesus. The goal is not to simply confront, but to influence change. And we can't influence change if we block, hide, and ignore people that disagree with us. And we can't influence change if we're constantly yelling at people how wrong they are. This is how we influence change. I love this quote from Dale Carnegie. He says, "Personally, I am very fond of strawberries and cream, but I have found that for some strange reason, fish prefer worms. So when I went fishing, I did not think about what I wanted. I thought about what they wanted. I didn't bait the hook with strawberries and cream. Rather, I dangled a worm or grasshopper in front of the fish and said, 'Wouldn't you like to have that?'" He goes on to say, "Why not use the same common sense when fishing for people? That if you want to win people, it doesn't come from arguing them into submission. It doesn't come from yelling and screaming. And it also doesn't come from ignoring them. It comes from learning how to have common ground with them. And you have common ground with them ultimately so that you can win them to Jesus." So if you're a Christian, you're here today, I want to just quickly give you three ways to gain influence. And I don't have time to go into these, so I want to encourage you to take a picture of the screen or write these down. These are things that I want you to be thinking out throughout the week. Three ways to gain influence. Number one, listen to other people when they talk. Did you know one of the number one ways to gain influence in someone's life is to listen to them? This will change the way that you argue. When you argue with someone, there's not a lot of listening going on. You ever jumped into the comment section of a debate on Facebook? No one's listening to anyone. If you want to change the tone, start asking questions and listening to what they say. The next time, here, listen, if you're married or you're dating, try this with your spouse. The next time your spouse says something that you disagree with, instead of just jumping down their throat and telling them how wrong they are, take a second to pause and say, "That's interesting. Can you tell me why you think that way?" Take a second to listen. Listening does not mean that you agree with them. But watch what happens when you pull someone in and say, "I care about you enough to value your opinion. So you vote very differently than I do, and everything inside of me wants to yell and scream, but I'm just curious because I know that you're standing on something and it comes from the viewpoint of where you sit. So help me understand your point of view." Watch what happens. When you listen, you gain influence into someone's life. When you gain influence, you then have the ability to say, "Hey, I have a different perspective. Can I share that with you?" But you don't get to share that until you listen. So listen to other people when they talk. Number two, care about people more than issues. The reason that I don't unfriend or block or hide people is because I want to care about people more than their issues. And it's hard because some of you guys post things on social media and everything in me wants to hide and block and unfriend you. But I want to care about you more than that post, even when I totally disagree with the post. Number three, be consistent about what's most important to you. I don't know if you caught it, but I hope you did. Do you know what Paul said over and over again in this? That he becomes all things to all people. To the Jew, he becomes like a Jew. To the Gentile, he becomes like a Gentile. To the weak, he becomes weak. He does all of this, and he said it over and over again. Why? What is his purpose? To win people to Jesus. And when you want to have influence, a way to have influence is be consistent. What I want to make sure that you heard is I'm not telling anyone that you need to be silent about your faith or you shouldn't be passionate about your faith or that you shouldn't talk about Jesus. Talk about Jesus. Be consistent in your faith. Be consistent in what's most important, and you'll find over time you'll gather a following. You'll gather people who will say, "Hey, I like what you have to say, even if I disagree." Be consistent, but as you're being consistent, also be kind. Remember all three of these. Listen to other people when they talk, even when you disagree with them. Care about people more than issues, and be consistent about what's most important to you. That takes us to our big idea. Once again, as a Christian, the goal is to win people, not arguments. So today's win. The win is what we do with all this. And the win is to become an influencer for Jesus. And I've outlined three ways that I think every single one of us can apply this, whether you're a student in middle school or high school, whether you're married, single, no matter what age group, you can have influence over people. And if you're a Christian, how does that happen? Well, number one, we learn to listen to people when they talk. It's okay for someone to have a wrong opinion, especially online. It's okay for them to have a wrong opinion. If you want to gain influence, you got to ask them why they have that opinion. Listen to them and watch what happens. Number two, you got to care about people more than issues. Paul cared about winning people to Jesus more so than he cared about the whole debate between Jewish and Gentile people. Number three, be consistent about what's most important to you. Over and over again, Paul said what is most important to him is winning people to Jesus. And if you're a Christian, it should be what's most important to you as well. We pray. pray with me? God, we come before you and we thank you. We thank you that you've given us the scriptures to guide and direct our life. And we ask, God, that you'd help us to be obedient to them, that we would honor you. God, it's so hard because when we disagree with people, we just want to call them out. We want to argue. We want to unfriend them. We want to get rid of them. But God, you've called us to win people. So would you help us to hold on? Would you help us to hold on that we're called to win people, not arguments? And would you help us to bring people together? We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net or find us on Facebook or Twitter.